So you see, even excluding this data, there is a large spread of points. So this is just shows the precision of measurements of pronfolone production. And these are data which are really problematic. They are Fermilab data, rather recent, on proton beryllium light. So you don't expect large nuclear effects.
Why?
Because it's a small nucleus. But nevertheless, the people who produce the data, they have unconvoluted nuclear effects, and this is what they get. So you see the situation from this for this blue curve is not so easy at the moment. So given this problem with direct photons, it may be interesting to look at small mass lepton pair at large momentum. There it is expected that, so to give you an idea, the mass will be between a few hundred MeV in a range of energy between twice the temperature and five times the temperature of the plasma. So this has been pointed out by Paul Stankus, I think, at the conference 2 weeks ago. The background for this signal will be relatively less than for direct photon. However, because you have an extra E plus E minus decay, the rate is down by a factor 100 compared to direct photon. So to summarize, if there is hope to use photons or dilepton pair to look for coagulon plasma formation, one should look in the energy range of maybe 2 to 5, 6 GeV. 3 GeV would be appropriate for RIC, and 5 GeV would be appropriate for LHC.
What was the 10 GeV range? What factor in 10? And what was the scale in your previous picture?
The scale in the previous picture? These are all the data below 10 GeV, 3.5 to 10. Yeah, these are data over theory. Perfect agreement is here.
So two is 100% difference.
It's about 3 to 1 sometimes, yeah.
So it's like in jet fields, one really has to go to 50 GeV.
Yeah. No, but it's maybe, okay, maybe there is a clear problem with this data. This data, okay, they... I would believe that this is a data problem. Because you see, these are the data points on proton-proton at 24 GeV. These are the data points at 63 GeV. So why would the data points at 31 and 39 GeV would be here? There is a big problem here.
Theory says only equilibrium.
No, this is perturbative. I'm talking about the blue curve. Eh? I'm talking about the blue curve here. And I'm just discussing the error bar on this blue curve. So the point is, if this blue curve goes up, then it's catastrophe because you don't see thermal photons. So it's crucial, absolutely crucial, to be able to normalize this blue curve correctly in order to see the excess of photon. So essentially what I will go back now to the thermal production. And I will discuss the problem of these things in a coagulon plasma in the effective theory of Bratton-Pizarski, which is the hard thermal loop resum theory. So I assume equilibrium, mu equals zero. One could work at different chemical potential, but it's more complicated. And I will assume this, coupling very small. So I will briefly review the one loop. Then I will spend a lot of time on the two loops because many of the ingredients which go into the infinite loop, which was discussed was Yaffe in the conference, are already seen at the two loop. But before going to two loop, I would like to motivate why the HTL approach was not completely satisfactory when the first calculations were done by Bratton and Pizarski and Yuan to calculate photon rates. So there were two puzzles. The first puzzle was the following. They considered in 1990, they considered the production of a soft photon, soft meaning G times T, suffer in a coagulon plasma. So according to HTL, whenever you have a soft propagator, you should resum what is called hard summer loop. I don't go into details, I guess many people know this. Or when you have soft external lines, you should use a vertex corrected with one loop where the momenta in the loop are hard. So this is quite a complicated structure. And in fact, when you calculate the imaginary part, you have to look at what physical processes are contained. You have to take various cuts. And I'm going to just consider one cut of this diagram. So I consider this diagram with HTL propagator here and here, and then the vertex correction. So if you consider this cut, which contributes to this type of physical process. So it is a photon emission in the backward quark gluon scattering in the plasma. And that contributes, according to Bratton-Pizarski, at the leading order to photon production. Now, this is a bit strange because this is supposed to contribute at leading order, but this, which is much more natural, doesn't appear anywhere at the one-loop result. So there was something strange, that in the one-loop HTL, you are missing some processes which are a priori quite important. And in fact, these people in a completely different framework calculated this and said that they are the dominant processes to be considered for photon production. So there was a kind of a paradox why HTL, which solved a lot of problems, missed this kind of physical processes. Well, that's a long story, but this is gauge invariant construction. Yeah. So Bratton and Pizarski, I mean, I don't know if you've seen their papers in the 90s, but they spend a lot of time to check this.
Even if the bottom diagram is neglected, it's gauge invariant.
Yeah. Yeah, but there are many, many, this is only one process. They have many, many processes in there. Which one? This one? Yeah. So I'm coming to that. It's a two-loop diagram. Yeah, yeah. That's where I spend a lot of time on this. Because in fact, if you believe Yaffe and company, iteration of these exchanges is what dominates the infinite number of. So in fact, I spend most of the time in that. There was another small paradox that if now I go to a different kinematical regime, I go to a kinematical regime where the mass of the lepton, produced lepton, is not soft, neither hard. It's in between. So then you can, the calculation was done in bare perturbation theory, and this was the result. However, if you take HTL, the Bratton-Pizarski-Yuan result, and you extrapolate to this regime, then you just get this term. So you are also missing some leading terms. So there was the somewhat some problems, and that motivates the looking at two-loop diagrams beside the one-loop ones. So this is the standard formula, which I will probably not discuss again, which relates the rate of production of a real photon to the imaginary part of the current-current correlation function. And this is the formula for the virtual photon, where you have the extra photon propagator and the virtual photon decaying into a lepton pair, so which brings this extra factor here, plus factors of threes and pis and so on. So I will discuss only this subject, and this is related to the rate by these simple functions. So for the one loop result, I will just quote various results. So you are going to a regime where the momentum of the photon is hard, and eventually if I look at virtual photon, I'm looking at this regime where the mass of the photon is very small compared to its energy. So you start the one-loop result, which is the diagram I showed before. If Q is hard, necessarily one of the momentum flowing through the loop is hard. So according to Bratton-Pizarski, you don't need to do any decoration. You can use the bare propagator. So there's the possibility here that there's one hard propagator, and this is soft. Now, if both, there's also a possibility that both propagators are hard. So in that case, above some threshold for the momentum flowing through this line, you have to calculate these diagrams. So the if you cut this diagram, it corresponds to this scattering, QCD Compton scattering, or Q-Cuba annihilation gluon photon. So I was very careful to put Shoyak as the first author, but he's not here, so to appreciate. But these people, the Caillantier and company, did also this calculation. They didn't have to wait for HTL to do this calculation, and they put a handmade regulator, and they got some result. Now, what the HTL calculation brings is that you have a consistent scheme to do your calculation with some regulator which is given by the theory, which is not hand put, and which allows to calculate also constant pieces. And I've written that here. So the rate of production, I mean, it's is equal to T square, the usual exponential damping, times log TE over, over the mass of the regulator plus constant pieces. Now, for the virtual photon case, so small mass virtual photon, large momentum, the situation is a bit more confused. So there are two results. In one case, the soft cutoff is provided by the mass of the virtual photon with some constant piece. In another case, another calculation, it is provided by the thermal mass with another constant piece. And this is an anticipation of the results that we are starting to look at with Meg Carrington and François Gélis, where we should have something like that with a third constant piece. Hopefully. And you have to be optimistic sometimes. What do you think, Meg?
But we still have the quark mark there.
It's a mixture.
If it all was put in by hand, you have a quark mark.
No, because it's more complicated. It's not only putting a quark mass, it's calculating this with the full spectral function of the fermion. Okay. And above, you do the standard calculation eventually with masses.
But what is the difference between these approaches giving different results? What is the difference between the approaches?
Just calculation? Or there is none of these people have been very careful in ordering this value, this mass, with respect to this. So it's a very complicated process, situation when you have two small masses. You have to be careful which one is larger than the other because the physics is different. For instance, if you have Q square greater than four times the mass if you have square root of Q square greater than two times the mass of the fermions, you have a process by annihilation, Q cube annihilation during the doing. Now, if it's less, this process doesn't go. So it's crucial, for instance, to rank Q square compared to 4MQ square. So this is one, you have more complicated process. No, none of these people have really done it.
I think we not learn from Jaffe that all these results are, I don't know if they said wrong, but incomplete.
So this is the one loop.
Yeah, but I mean,
Jaffe,
what is the physical result?
Yeah, so this is one loop plus infinite number of loops.
And he said that he has the physical.
Yeah, but the physical result is the infinite number of loops that he has calculated plus this term.
Plus?
This term, yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is not contained in his calculation. This is not contained in his calculation. I mean, you can see it here, for instance. This is essentially like this diagram. Jaffe considers gluon exchanges, never considers I mean, if you look at the diagram, you will find that this type of diagram is not contained in Yaffe. You would have a gluon, which is space-like gluon, which is exchanged, produced by some scattering here. So this is a new, it's a, not the same phase space as the one considered by Yaffe. Can I maybe summarize?
The phase result was log in one over coupling plus a known function.
Yeah.
Getting over
t. Yeah.
So some of what you have constants here after the log.
Can I go back? I don't know if there's some light here. So I'm drawing two diagrams. So this is the gluon exchange, on-shell gluon. So if you call the momentum here L, when you cut it, it's L square positive. It's a plasmon. Now what Yaffe is calculating is the same diagram plus corrections, but he considers only L square negative. So the damping, the Landau damping part of this cut gluon. It doesn't consider this one. Okay, so in fact, you have to add this type of topology. It's not the same phase space in a sense.
But how does it modify its result? It's a log, plus a known function.
The way he does it, he just adds this. And he considered only the real photon production. So, and this Dobaudet, this is the result. So Yaffe always adds the one loop contribution for real photon, plus this N loop, which we are going to talk about. And it's a question of, you know, essentially this difference.
It's basically the question is, what is physically the correct?
The sum of two.
Exactly, so you are saying that Yaffe is also incomplete?
Yeah, no, Yaffe calculated this, okay? Where, say I put it here and symbolize the space-like and plus all kinds of iterations. But when he does his phenomenology, he always adds this one.
Do these expressions have incorrect knowledge?
No. I mean, there will be infrared problem if the mass of the quark goes to zero. I mean, this clearly acts as an infrared regulator. Yeah, clearly this, if you have thermal masses, you should go back to something like that if Q square goes to zero, clearly. So this is not completely so.
There were no claims in the literature that this was shown by the magnetic mass?
The magnetic mass, no, not in here, but the magnetic mass is supposed to be smaller. But it's you don't need the magnetic mass. It's shielded by this quark mass, which is GT. Was the magnetic mass is supposed to be G squared T. So magnetic mass effects are irrelevant here. I mean, this type of process is not sensitive at all to very soft momentum.
I haven't understood something very simple. When you compute production of real photons,
yeah,
then you don't need to worry about one loop diagram because it doesn't contribute at all.
No.
So then you only need to worry about these two loop diagrams.
Yeah, but I don't need.
Why do you write at the same time both of them? If you are interested in real photons.
So if I'm interested in real photon, this is with bare fermion is doesn't contribute.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not working in the bare theory. I'm working in the HTL theory, in the hard thermal loop theory. So I start with hard thermal loop propagator, hard thermal loop vertices, and then I have to calculate this. But this means that essentially you do some insertion here. Okay? So essentially the HTL is resumming higher loop diagrams, which contributes as the same order as the lowest one. So if you're right, I mean, this one loop HTL diagram contains an infinite number of loop diagrams in the bare theory.
So essentially this one loop diagram is kind of input for the two loop diagrams, yes?
No. What do you mean?
Because you use resumed propagators.
Yes. What do you mean an input? It's, I've defined my propagator, my This is my HTL propagator, which is an infinite series of self-energy insertion. Okay, so I just built my one loop HTL diagram, and I calculate. Now this would be the two loop results. There are many other diagrams which I have not shown because they don't contribute, but this is an impossible calculation to make. So fortunately, if you look a little bit at these diagrams, you realize that the dominant part comes when the fermion momentum around the loop is dominated by hard momentum. So if it's dominated by hard momentum, you can almost take the bare momentum. However, what we do, since we work in the, we start with the HTL as an effective theory, and then we construct loop diagrams from HTL, from the HTL effective theory, we take the asymptotic limit of the HTL propagator, which is, contains this little mass shift here. Okay, so this is what we will use, and this is the thermal mass of the quark calculated in HTL. So I skip some details because I simplify a bit. I say almost.
But if it's hard line, you don't have to take those thermal corrections into the mass of quark.
No, I'm saying that I'm starting with my effective Lagrangian, and I calculate one loop, and I calculate two loop plus counter terms, and so on. So my starting point is the effective Lagrangian of Bratton-Pizarski. So in my effective Lagrangian, I have this mass term. Okay?
Right, but if it's a hard line, you're saying that the dominant contribution comes from the hard line of
yeah.
So if it's hard, you don't have to do this.
No, I'm saying that forget about the bare theory. I work in the effective theory with effective propagators and vertices. And I take the hard momentum limit of the effective propagator, which is this. This is my this is the scheme in which I work.
So that means you will use HTL only for the
blue propagator. So I use HTL here because there's a hard momentum limit of my HTL propagator, and I will use HTL full HTL here because it's soft. But I insist on this scheme, starting not from a bare theory and the bare theory and then imagining some diagrams. I start from the effective theory, and I construct my loop expansion with counter terms when they are necessary.
So you have done all this with the bare theory? That's a different theory.
No, I'm doing with the effective theory.
Yeah, but earlier you have done this. Is the Well-Bantu calculation?
No, this type of calculation, the long time ago it was the bare, before HTL existed.
And now you go to...
Yeah.
Patrick, strictly speaking, the HTL should be used only for soft.
Yes, that's...
I guess this is a question addressed.
Yeah.
So, in a way,
why should it be?
Because it's effective and accurate only if incoming momentum are soft.
Yeah.
If you go away from that, then you have other contributions.
Okay, but then, I agree.
I think you use the fact here that if you are in this regime of very hard momentum, HTL and the exact one which is not going soft. Is an accident, it is not guaranteed by...
No, but I'm using a different scheme. I start with the effective Lagrangian, and
I understand that.
Okay, so what prevents me from doing that?
You cannot consider momentum.
You see, if I'm doing...
Normally, you would think that you have already integrated all lines with high momenta in order to produce HTL.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you work with an HTL and you have again hard lines, and
puzzled
as well. This is
absolutely. That's why. Can you listen, please? I have some counter terms. So when the line becomes hard, I have my counter terms. So this is this is completely logical. So this is the this is the consistent.
Already integrated out all this high momentum modes, so they are not present anymore.
Doing is using bare propagator for the fermion, so it's like coming back and saying the fermions are there and using only the HDL for the
removal. Yeah, but that can
no, it's not completely. It's not completely. It's not completely. It's not completely true because, well, in fact, I'm simplifying a bit. I'm taking the. Since I start with the effective theory, I believe these expressions even when I take the hard limit. So I have some. But have my counter terms. My effective theory is the same as my bare theory. So what, provided I put the appropriate counter terms, when I go to higher loops, I'm perfectly okay. You cannot prevent me from doing that. And I think this is the consistent scheme to work.
The question is whether this would practically work. If the counter terms give enormous contribution, then
yeah, but I'm working at two loops, so the counter terms are simple.
I want to get it to conceptually right, beyond now the techniques. I mean, the effective theory is something in the Desonian spirit where you have integrated out these modes. So now, normally, you cannot simply use this effective.
So to make it simple, take a simple example. My HTL generates a mass. I start with a massless Lagrangian. My HTL theory generates a mass. So my new starting point will be a theory with a mass, provided I add the counter terms, which is what I'm doing. That's as simple as that. There's nothing new. Exactly. I'm putting the mass in the bare in my starting point, my propagator, and then I have mass counter terms. Except in HTL, it's a bit more complicated because you have vertices and so on. But this is exactly the spirit of which we are using, which many people have been using. I mean. In lambda phi cube calculation and so on.
So this is regularizing the current divergences in a sense.
In a sense, it amounts to that, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's,
so that's one method of reorganizing your topologic expansion. I completely agree. But HDL is normally another method.
No. You can formulate it this way. That's all. Okay, when you go to higher loops, then it will be complicated. But at a two-loop level, this can be handled. I don't want to go into the details, but this is the spirit in which we do this calculation.
But what happens if you take hard the lines indeed and forget about those counters?
So the yes, we get problem that has been we found that long time ago together with Tony Reban, that HTL is appropriate to regularize, to resum the infrared behavior, to describe amplitude with infrared momentum. But they don't handle the collinear problem. So whenever they have collinear singularity, HTL blows up. So this is a way within the HTL to be able to regularize collinear divergences. No.
Infrared divergence happens in infrared.
Yeah.
So it's not the hard momentum.
No.
So you still perfectly safe to use hard lines in ultraviolet and then switch it at some point.
I'll show you an if we continue the calculation, you will find that I get some divergences if I don't work in the framework I'm describing.
But
in other words,
the not infrared then.
No, it's something collinear singularity. Collinear singularity. So HTL is absolutely unable to handle collinear singularities. And this is what happens when you produce a massless particle. When you produce a massless particle, for instance, when you have a massless particle here, you may have these two momentum to be parallel. And if nobody has a mass, that blows up. So that's the way to handle collinear singularity within the HTL scheme. In fact, this problem has been studied by Tony Reban also. And he proposed the same now. So where I was. So these finally are the more or less the diagrams one has to calculate. And if I'm starting looking at small photon masses, I will just have to consider these two cuts. Maybe I didn't know if I did get a picture of these cuts. Maybe I just give a picture to. But I will come back to that later. Cutting these diagrams, just amounts to taking the square of the following amplitudes. And you can have a quark line also. So the interference term gives you the vertex, and the square of each gives you the self-energy correction. I should have put a factor 2 here because there are.
So it's the only line which is soft, it's
muon. Yeah,
so you would have obtained this result calculating from the wave perturbation theory for the quarks and just dressing the muon, which is soft.
No.
But the Taylor mass is something you can get. You have to do something anyway because you have this.
So I'm saying that within this scheme, where I take the effective theory seriously, that solves my problem. You will see. So like you say, I mean, the important ingredient is that to have this, I keep the full form of the gluon propagator. So which has a transverse part, a logical part, this can be checked. Not the gauge term, dependent term do not contribute. And when I cut the gluon, I introduce the spectral function, which has this form. So I will come back to that because there are nice things about the spectral function. But that just to give you the form of the spectral function of the cut gluon, which is generated by Landau damping, you have this this formula here, where essentially the scale of the momentum, of the momentum flowing through the gluon, is set up, is given by GT. Because these objects, real of pi and imaginary of pi, are proportional to the mass of the plasmon mass, which is proportional to GT. So, sorry, they're proportional to G squared T squared. So this essentially will be the two ingredients. Now, if you put everything together, you get some complicated function. So you have the loop integration over the quark momentum with appropriate statistical factors. You have the loop integration over the gluon momentum times some trace, the trace of the quark loop, and times some fermion propagators. So I've written here only the scalar part of the fermion propagator. All the spinor part are in the trace. This is for the vertex, and there's a self-energy contribution. So these are my retarded fermion propagator. So essentially, what you have to do, you have to take the real part of this object, where you have chosen to have retarded propagator on this line, an advanced propagator on the upper line. So you have pairs of poles which are facing each other, one retarded, one advanced, one retarded, one advanced. And you have two loop, two momenta. So the idea is to loop, to choose variables to do the integration of the complex plane, pick up the pole, for instance, of the retarded propagator P, and inject the, calculate the advanced propagator. So if you do that, so you pick up the pole in P. Then for the advanced propagator, you get this structure here. So you realize that after you have injected the value of the pole, you calculate the residue, so the value of the advanced propagator, you get something which is relatively large. Because the denominator, so R squared, is just 1 to PT squared times an effective mass. An effective mass is defined by this quantity, which is the mass of the quark and the mass of the virtual photon. So if you take real photon, you get this, equal to zero. And you are left with the mass of the quark. And if you take the mass of the quark equal to zero, you get 1 over pt squared. And this is just the expression of the collinear singularity. So this effective thermal mass of the quark plays a very important role to. So this is the basis of the enhancement mechanism which will make the higher loop calculation more important. So what else? Yeah, let's say the scale of this, assuming that P0 and Q0 order T, the typical scale of this denominator is of the order G squared T squared. And this is somewhat larger than expected, because normally R is equal to P plus Q, so the normal scale will be T squared, not G squared T squared. So this propagator is enhanced. Retarded and advanced, yeah. It's a variety of the... You can do... For me, no, but you can do what you want.
No.
I think it's much more... No, I think it will be easier in the real time, because you can... to do these integrals, it is easy to do it in the complex energy plane. So you have two pairs of propagators, one for each loop here. So you have these two denominators which come in. And doing this, these integrals, we choose to make them to do the integral with an original variable. That constrains everywhere except, of course, in the pole. That constrains the P, the longitudinal momentum, to be equal to the energy. So this we will use extensively later. So you have, again, I repeat the equation. So you have some longitudinal integration here, and then transverse momentum integration, PT and LT, with the pairs of propagators which reduce to this. And then you have the spectral function. No, we use something what we call the retarded advanced formalism, which is a new way that we, with Chris Van Vert, we worked some time ago. And it's absolutely trivial to write this type of diagrams in the retarded advanced. So it's a variety of Keldysh. You can take any contour, you can... depends on the structure. But for the type of diagrams we look at, it's absolutely trivial in the retarded advanced form. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So in fact, this is what I was saying here. But before this, I just want to look again at, so my matrix elements, I have the spectral function of the gluon times this pair of poles, this pair of propagators. So again, the spectral function of the gluon LT is of the order G squared T squared. So all my variables are of the order G squared T squared. So for instance, if I consider this and I do the integration over PT, I will get 1 over G squared T squared. And this is exactly this mechanism like Keio is saying, whenever you have pairs of propagators, advanced and retarded, plus gluon exchange, then you get an extra G square from the gluon, and you get 1 over G square from the integration on this loop here. So you get 1, and you can iterate these things over and over again, and this is what Yaffe and company did. But it's crucial to have this quasi-pinching singularity with retarded and advanced propagator facing each other. So that was for the transverse part. Maybe we should look to get a view of the physical process. What I drew on the board, it's here. You have an integral from minus infinity over the energy variable. So if the energy are both positive, or in that case, that corresponds to quark branch Talon, or anti-quark branch Talon. And in that case, the statistical weight restricts the phase space of the energy to be over the T. So this is just a trivial calculation. But you have another case, which somehow we didn't expect, which is this case here, where you have P0, in my convention, I guess R0 positive, and P0 negative. So that corresponds to this off-shell annihilation. And in that case, the statistical weight combination tells you that the phase space is of the order Q0. So if the energy of the photon is very large, this process will dominate over the Bremsstrahlung process. So this off-shell annihilation, this is 3 to 2 particle, gives the rate of dominates the rate of production at large momentum of the photon. Now I cannot resist showing this formula, because this complicated integral, which I showed you before, in a very specific case, so this is this integral here. So with 1, 2, 3, 4 variable, can be done exactly. And this is the result. So it can be done exactly in the, if you have 3 flavors and 2 flavors and 3 colors. And this is the exact result. That was, so there's a big miracle and many small miracles. So you see that even the symmetry property is right, it should be, imaginary part would be anti-symmetric and so on. So this is the, comes from Bremsstrahlung. This comes from annihilation. And I guess there shouldn't be any constant part because of this anti-symmetry property of, but that we didn't think about before. So the one of the reasons, because is we have a small miracle, that the integral over the spectral function can be done exactly. So you have this sum rule here, which is exactly what we need, which tells you that you integrate over the x, which is the scaled energy variable in the gluon. So you integrate over the allowed range, and you get this simple term, which is, so when it is transverse, this is zero, so no, that's no mass to the transverse gluon. And for longitudinal case, it is the Debye mass. And here you have the asymptotic plasmon mass. So this is the, so since in our calculation, we need the combination of a transverse and longitudinal in this way, this integral over the spectral function just reduces to that. 1 over LT plus the Debye mass. And in fact, this is just the kernel which enters the Yaffe's equation. So the fact that we have it in an exact form will considerably simplify the solution of the integral equation. So I don't know, maybe Keio was interested in a sum rule, but I won't go into the details. Maybe you can go in private, but the essential reason is that usually when you write a sum rule, this is your propagator, and this is the spectral function of the propagator, and this is the standard sum rule, which allows you to derive some nice identities. Now, usually what people do, what we need, is we integrate over x, which is L0 over L, I've said it somewhere but not here. We integrate over x, but we keep L fixed. But what we need to keep this fixed. So L square 1 minus x square fixed. So this is what we really need to do. So in our case, we integrate over x, keeping this fixed. And that's enough to give us this nice sum rule. Yep. This is what comes out.
And this prescription that you are putting here is a way to go to this limit, because this limit is singular.
No, I mean, we just fix that here. Okay, yeah. And we calculate the integral.
No, but depending on how you get to omega equal to 0, q equal to 0, whether you have omega equal to 0 first or q equal to 0 first, you get different answers.
No, because we have a transverse momentum. This is, what you, No, in that case, we are in the space-like region. So in fact, we have L0, LZ, and parallel, and LT. So this is not, this one is fixed. And this goes to zero.
Okay.
So we are in the space, like we take the energy. Yeah. So I don't know, the sum rule cannot be wrong because François Jalis did the numerical calculation and then exactly checked that the sum rule is, it completely fits with the sum rule. And in general, François doesn't make many mistakes. So. So this, in fact, the simple final result of this calculation in the general case, you can write your imaginary part of the retarded for real or virtual photon in this form. So you have a factorization between energy variable or longitudinal variable, and then these functions, which are just given by an integral, which involve the ratio of the soft scales. So essentially, in the if you have a real photon, that would be the ratio of the mg over mq squared, the thermal mass of the quark over the thermal mass of the gluon, or the Debye mass, let's say. The Debye mass over the thermal mass of the quark. So it's a rather simple result. In all this calculation, I don't want to go into the detail, but just mention something. And for the case where q square is greater, larger than 4mq square, so the external mass of the photon is greater than the 4 times the mass square of the fermions, then the imaginary part is a bit more complicated because we have to consider this cut and also this cut, which correspond to the production of a QQ bar going to a photon. So each of these is infinite singular. When you add everything, you get some finite result, no infinite singularity. But then we are left with integrable singularities at Q square is equal to 4mq square. And this is completely standard in perturbation theory. Nothing to do with lack of infrared compensation. And I just will show you a complicated plot to illustrate this. So this is the rate of production of a virtual photon. So we fix the energy. Temperature is 1 GeV, and we vary the mass. So in this choice, the thermal mass of the quark is here. And that would be the one loop result, the Born term, one loop result. This line is the two loop, is the Born term, is the QQ bar annihilation. This will be the correction due to HTL one loop, I discussed at the beginning. And the red part will be the two loop result. So you see divergence here. Plus infinity, minus infinity here. But if you introduce some smearing, then you get a finite result. So that will be the spectrum of, as a function of the mass of the photon.
Smearing
turned to be wrong.
Now, so,
yeah,
Karsh did the calculation at Q0 equals zero. Okay. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Forgetting this, the Karsh result, I mean, this result essentially grows like 1 over Q0. And Karsh result shows that it goes down like that. But he has huge error bar. And there's a big, for me, it's a big puzzle. Because they, in the lattice calculation, they seem to have only processes with a threshold. But all this Bremsstrahlung, all this Compton scattering, there are processes without any threshold. And that doesn't appear. So I really don't know what is the problem, but there is a big...
This is completely Euclidean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about lattice, but for me it's a big problem. And I don't see why, I mean... You see, even Yaffe and company, they resummed this more or less, not exactly this case, but you expect that instead of being a 1 over Q0 divergence, it would be 1 over square root of Q0. But still, it survives. No, you have to restrict yourself to Q0 greater than G4th T or G square T. So at when everything is zero, you don't know in perturbative theory. But yes, but I mean they seem to have a, you see, they seem to have a threshold effect at this level here. The effective mass of the thermal mass of the quark. So if they have the threshold effect way out, we no problem. But they have the threshold effect here. And they have absolutely nothing here. Okay, they claim the error bounds are big, but there may be some more physics missing, but it's a big puzzle. I don't understand. Exactly. So some people doubt it. Yeah.
On the other hand, I mean, you do not have really small parameters, and G is not really small, so you do not really know at this type of temperatures.
No. What you see, what we could do, what we imagine doing, is keep our calculation and put the lattice parameters, like the thermal mass of the quarks that they get out of lattice. So the thermal mass of quarks from lattice are larger than the HTL mass, I believe. So this whole thing will come down. But you will not change the shape, you see? It is the shape of the distribution which is a bit worrying.
But you told me that the very small square root of Q squared anyhow are not really...
No, but G4 T, so it's really very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is it GT or is it alpha T, square root of alpha T? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Yeah. But intuitively, I don't see why Bremsstrahlung or this type of effect will be. You see, we have processes without any thresholds. And they don't. So that's.
But it can always be a type of effective production of some infrared regulator masses that you would not suspect in perturbation theory. Is that not possible? I mean, you would say it's a very small.
They cannot go, by the way, they cannot go to very small energy because of the size of the lattice. So everybody is limited towards the. But I think that's an interesting problem, and you see, because the situation for photon is very interesting. We predict this if we believe it's a dogma. It's equilibrium, we predict this. Hector will predict something which is way up, and the lattice people predict zero, essentially. So we are a very interesting situation. The data, we are waiting for the data. This?
No.
It's just plugging in alpha s equal 0.3, the standard value that people do. This is the thermal mass of HTL thermal mass. We're completely HTL here. So just putting alpha s equal 0.3 gives you G122, something like that. Absolutely, yeah. So you have to do some resummation. Yeah. And I expect, and that we are trying to do, especially Francois is doing, to do the, because we have the integral equation for massless, for massive photons. So you introduce a width, so rescattering correction, and that will smooth out. The question is whether or not it will completely smooth it out, or they will see a bump. I don't know.
So you're saying that the system is hot using the method of two flare, masters two quarks. Masters quarks and
anti-quarks. No, I don't specify the number of quarks. Here it's the general result.
Oh, but you must have some quarks.
Yeah, I have some, yeah, I have the full thermal equilibrium with. There was a very good paper written by Catani and Weber 3 years ago where they showed that if in perturbation theory, so nothing to do with high temperature, if you have a cross section which has a given order is as a theta function constraint from something like that, then at higher order you generate singularity at this point. So integrable singularity. We calculate, we looked at this analytic form here, and there are square root singularities times the log here, and there are square root singularity on this side.
You can never expect that an experimental
error. No, so it means that, this means that perturbation theories breaks down, and you have to do some resummation.
And
that's Yaffe, for instance, also.
But is
he's doing some resummation.
Emphatically states, which is correct, that he is at infinite temperatures. So it's a weak coupling calculation. It doesn't have any relevance.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, yeah. But I mean.
That is most definitely, it applies at these temperatures.
But no, even if you do Yaffe, what you will do, you will introduce some. If you go to a higher order, you introduce such corrections here. And that gives a width to your propagator, and the delta function becomes smooth functions. So that will solve. At zero temperature, normally the people, I mean, the way to cure it is gluon emission.
What would happen if you would have a walk off the path of the MEV, something like that?
We can turn the program. So this will go much higher. The threshold will be moved here.
I mean, a fundamental current quark mass, really fundamental mass, not a.
Ah, you mean.
Mass. Like a human fine structure. In
your would you cut off your variable photon?
No, but this massless quark will still be there, will still give this contribution, and the mass.
They're not massless anymore.
All of them are massive.
You can
loop. I mean, it's proportional. The result is proportional to the number of flavor. So your two massless quarks will keep going in this.
No
massless quark.
All
okay.
All of them are mass of 100 MeV because the lattice has, of course, effective quark masses.
Yeah.
So that may influence the results. So
yeah, but we cannot.
Simply, if you would have.
But that's, you see, this quark, if they are thermalized, they will get an HTL mass.
That I understand.
That will give them a mass of the order of GeV in that parametrization. So I don't expect the 100 MeV current mass to give an effect. No. No, no.
But if you take a physical QCD with two light and one strange quark,
yeah.
You look at this strain, then somehow you will somewhere see some structure.
Yes, except that, yeah. But I think it won't be very visible because you see the strange.
Probably here, you should, those current quark masses, then they wouldn't matter at all.
Exactly, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
You have your diagrams with these half quark lines.
Yeah.
You say in these half quark lines you use already this
summer mass
of 2.3 GeV.
That was the whole point of using HTL.
But that is now bringing me to the question. I mean, if you would really go to very, very high momentum of the quark for the quark propagators, would you expect that you would still get this thermal mass?
The thermal mass is G square, is GT.
Yeah, I understand. But normally, I mean, behind the HTL, you have this picture that you have already indicated all this high momentum increase of freedom. Now, if you really look at very hard propagators, you would say, strictly speaking, you should not have integrated out yet this high momentum degrees of freedom. And you may come when you go to very high momenta really back to just the free propagator essentially.
So what would I get? I don't know.
I do not know.
No, I don't see why it's... No, I will get the same.
But the hard ones, they do have a correction. And they do have the hard... And they do have a thermal mass as well.
They interact with the medium.
They interact with
the
medium. No, they do have, but they do have only after integrating out some poles.
No, they just... okay, you resum these diagrams, or you resum loop diagrams. If they interact in the system,
then... There's a picture of integrating out nodes.
Yeah, it's...
valid if you concentrate on the soft region of the space. But now if you look at the hard degree, it also interacts with the mass.
But if you go really to propagate a very high Q, some effects are tiny.
Because the
momentum acts as an infrared cutoff, so the temperature is just forgotten.
But the mass here is 1 jet, so if you go to 10 jet, this is induced by effect.
If you go with Q very high,
yes.
And actually even you will not get this fraction.
Why?
Because this propagator has its own infrared regulator just coming from the momentum in the propagator. So your thermal corrections will be just very small.
But why does it... What do you mean it has its own infrared... You mean that it's a it's bare mass?
Corrections to the quad propagator. They go to very high momentum. I will find only very suppressed corrections because the momentum of the quad propagator acts as an effective infrared cutoff. So the modes, the question if you have your Matsubara frequencies instead of.
I don't understand what you say. If you have a quark which E plus E minus scattering emitting a photon.
Yeah, I just compute the quark propagator at very high momentum. They are suppressed because you have another infrared cutoff scale which is given by the momentum of the propagator itself, which will. Just makes the thermal corrections very small. So
I don't see that. Yeah.
In this limit, you would certainly not expect that you get a big mass, thermal mass of GT.
I don't see what you.
No.
It's a T. No, it would be a mass of. No.
Yeah, but the location wouldn't be at 2G, we say, but somewhere smaller.
I'm not discussing the effect it would have on this one. It is just this question, if you have a hard propagator somewhere in it, to what extent can you use really the hard thermal results for the
HD? You calculate one loop correction to that in a medium. So the scale of the momentum is given by T. So it will be whatever the initial momentum of your quark, the mass will be GT. That's all. I mean, you can just do the calculation. Because the exponential factors, that's the thermal factors cut off the momentum in the loop, of the momentum in the plasma. So that's what dominates the...
I believe
it will be GT.
Consider the propagator in the effective theory, it has a self-energy. The quarks have self-energy.
Yeah, sure.
At small momenta, they approach this thermal mass, say, over a GT. But when you consider this
energy
momenta, it decreases.
No, it's you get the dispersion relation. This is obtained. You get your dispersion relation is P0 is momentum square plus N square. And the asymptotic mass is given in, is calculated in HTL, and that's a constant. You can...
Well, in HTL, yes, but in your approach, it's not consistent. You have to take...
It just have one loop correction, one loop correction. It's not HTL, it's one loop correction.
But it depends on momentum.
No, I'm saying no. No, no, and no.
It does depend
on the dispersion
window at very tiny momentum.
No.
At large momentum, it depends strongly.
No, we can discuss that. No. That's a technical. No, I can stop whenever you want. I just want to.
I just wanted to, you know, so you've got the chance.
Yeah. So I just want to make some qualitative comments on LPM effect. So I go back to this loop diagram. And I'm doing other self-energy corrections of that type, which means I'm letting the quark rescatter in the plasma, essentially. So what it amounts to, changing the epsilon, which is from the retarded advance prescription, which is usually taken to zero. You change it to a physical value, which is a damping rate. So when you allow for these corrections here, you introduce some imaginary part in your propagators. Now, we said before we took epsilon to zero, so this was zero, this was zero, and the only cutoff was this M effective. Now, if you keep that as a physical parameter, which is a damping rate of order G squared T, then you have two cutoffs which compete. And if you look, for instance, if you take very small momentum, so you have to compare the size of this and the size of this cutoff. So if you take U0 small, for instance, you have this this type of equality. And when Q0 becomes very small, the left-hand side, which contains gamma, can become very large. And therefore, you expect this rescattering correction to be important. Just kinematics. Now, if you, on the contrary, if you go to Q0 very large, then this other diagram dominates all momentum over the T. And again, you have to compare Q0 gamma to mq squared. So when Q0 is large, the width effect dominates. So LPM is expected to be important both at small Q0 and at large Q0. And this is illustrated here. So this is not this naive calculation I've just shown you. It's the full calculation of Arnold, Moore, and Yaffe, where you show the two-loop correction here. And the two-loop, the calculation with LPM. And the scale is Q0 over T. So you find that, as I advertised, that the small Q0 and large Q0, the LPM corrections are important. Because kinematically, it's the relative weight of the real cutoff and the damping rate cutoff change. So that was the result of the... Now, I don't know if I should stop. I've prepared four or five transparencies on discussing the LPM, Arnold Yaffe calculation, but Moore and Yaffe calculation. Maybe I should stop now, and those who, if people are interested to discuss, I can go through the paper. There are quite a few tricks which are interesting to derive the integral equation, but maybe people would like to stop. And the LPM, but maybe some people should be given the opportunity to leave. I'm afraid it will be a bit technical, but try to do my best. So there are many things I will not.
Before people leave, I have an announcement. I mean, as most of you know, we usually go out for dinner together on Thursday. So the idea is to go out again tomorrow to this beach cafe. So if people are interested, I can make reservations. So people who want to go to the this crazy event, so I can count how many people. Is anyone bringing your...
There are some absence.
Okay, so it's about 20 people. So I will leave tomorrow afternoon, but I will make reservation for you at this beach cafe. Beach cafe. I mean, this, you can just walk to this restaurant from ITP along the beach, so you don't need a car. So this is another advantage of
So I hope I have tried to convince you that when you iterate this type of diagrams, when you add a pair of poles, you get a large contribution. So essentially what they redo, they resum this ladder diagrams. So they take the two-point function, is written in this way. I don't need an explanation. And the vertex satisfies integral equation, which is written here. So it's the vertex times this convolution with a gluon and a pair of propagator. So all, unlike what I did in the previous two-loop calculation, all fermion propagator are resummed with this correction. So they include a damping rate. So they are HTL resummed and rescattering process resummed. So the building blocks. So I will go through each term in particular. So I will go, there will be the vertex, gluon exchange, and the pair of propagators, which we have seen before, in fact. So to simplify, I'm following Yaffe and company. I'm working in QED, scalar QCD, or scalar QED. So this is the vertex function here. So the pair of propagators, this is exactly what we did before. So you remember that these pair of propagators give you this type of form, except Yaffe and company write it in a slightly more physical form. They add the damping rate, and they introduce this delta E, which is given here. This is why my related to my M effective before. So that we know. So this is the integral form. But undoing the integral, they just parameterize these two fermion exchange by this. Now for the gluon, they do about the same. You have the gluon exchange, and here, in fact, I add these two vertices. I put them together with the gluon exchange. And using the same trick as we did before, they can write the contribution of this piece of diagram as proportional to the spectral function of the gluon times this constraint I was mentioning before, times these leftovers from the fermion coupling to the vertices here, which are the same in spinor QED or scalar QED. So this adds this M here. So my basic ingredients are the vertex, F, which is the pair propagator, and M, which is the gluon exchange. So I'm just rewriting in words these pictures here. I don't know how to show it. The first one is the two-point function. So there is the statistical weights always the same, the vertex, and the fermion propagator, and sorry, the bare vertex and the resum vertex. And this is the integral equation satisfied by the vertex, big D, the bare term, times this convolution with gluon exchange here, pair of poles here, and the vertex again. So you realize that this is the combination which enters into the object we want to calculate. So the idea is to transform this integral equation into an integral equation for this object. This one? So you do it by recursion. So zeros are the term, you plug this here. You replace this vertex by the bare one. So you get one loop exchange, and you continue. So it's just the standard way to. So after they have done this, okay, then they play a few tricks. So they try to construct a integral equation for this object, and I've written it somewhere here. And they integrate over some transverse momentum. So I multiply this by f. I take the integral over some momentum pz, and I reconstruct this equation. So this is just f, which is I defined a previous transparency. And this is also just f, where you have two things. You have this p00 kill this term here. And here, the integration over the momentum fixes the momentum here in this vertex. So then they do just some very simple rewriting. They give a name to that. Okay, so this function and the same is the same as this one, except for the argument of the momentum. So they just give a name to this function, and they do some algebraic multiplication of things, and they get the integral equation. So I multiplied, I don't go into details, it's very trivial. So they find that the effective vertex has to satisfy this integral equation. This is the effective vertex at pt. And this is effective vertex which goes into the loop integral at pt plus lt. Now they do a very nice trick, which I think is maybe they are not the first one. But what they do, they reabsorb the width here into this integral. In fact, what you do is you can just calculate the damping rate or something proportional to the damping rate. And if you carry the calculation through, you will find that the damping rate is just expressed by this integral. So they can shift this term here, and they find the final integral equation, which is satisfied by this something related to the effective vertex, which is written here. So this is the function you're looking for, which satisfies this integral equation. So the thing which is nice, you can see here that this term is coming from the ladder summation, and this term is coming from the self-energy correction. So you see that there's a compensation between the two terms. And this is this type of compensation, which tells you that, in fact, your process of photon production is not sensitive to very small scales. Because they compensate. All these are momentum g squared t. I forgot to tell you that this diverges when Lt goes to zero, but it is... Yeah. It's exactly what it is. But it comes in a rather devious way, very, very elegant way. I mean, I think it's very cute, this trick. Yeah. It's a kind of Boltzmann equation, they say. It's self-energy. I'm saying that you see that when Lt goes to zero, which is the gluon momentum goes to zero, you get a zero. This diverges, in fact, at Lt equal to zero. But this converges. This diverges because there is no magnetic mass. In fact, with our sum rule, this... you see, this is the... this is the kernel. Once you have done used the sum rule trick, this is the kernel. So you exchange a transverse gluon and magnetic gluon and electric gluon. So if there was no compensation like that, you will have to introduce a magnetic mass to regularize our expression. But then you find that there is no no sensitivity to magnetic mass. I think the that you get a zero, I mean, to emit a photon, you need to give a kick. I think it's maybe related to that. If you have a scattering like that, they can only emit a photon if this has a virtuality. This is on shell, this is, okay, this is on shell. This absorbs the gluon and gets virtuality. If the virtuality goes to zero, so if your photon is not, it goes in a straight line, you cannot emit a photon.
Now I understand the implication. Yeah. So there are only two physical processes which are known to be sensitive to this scale. That's Fermi number violation. Another one is the wall velocity. So this could have been another one, but for this cancellation.
Uh-huh.
So it's not dominated by non-contact.
No.
It's really hidden here, so this is
But that would have been funny, that photon production would be dominated by non-perturbative at the lowest order. I mean, non-perturbative things come in the pressure at the fifth order or something like that.
What do
you say,
lowest order?
This is the... No, but in GT, it's a leading contribution. It's a, in the powers of G and T. It's an infinite loop, but I mean, the loop expansion is not the same as a coupling expansion. So that was essentially the result of Yaffe made simple. I forgot to say that here, this is not quite the end. That's, this is the general equation, and this is the form for the two-point function. But in fact, you need only the transverse part for the physical photon rate. And they show, so you need only the transverse part, so you just need this. And they in fact show that the longitudinal, I mean the zero, zero component cancels the ZZ component. So they show that this thing in fact is transverse. So this this now is the final thing, and that Moore and Jelis are working on that, is now that we have the sum rule, you can transform by Fourier transform, you go to a, instead of an integral equation, you go to a differential equation, which is much easier to solve. And this is what the result of.
Where did your beautiful analytic integration end?
This is the calculation of this kernel. This. Yeah. So that simplifies quite a bit. Okay, so I'm stopping. There are many things to do, but it's not finished. So I didn't talk about out of equilibrium, but there was a lot of discussion in the private discussion last week with Dan Boyanovsky. I think he discussed with everybody about your calculation and